States versus Cole, Mr. Bruno.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, counsel. Ryan Cole is not a career offender. This is a case that involves the application of the sentencing guidelines, and the issue is whether or not Ryan Cole qualifies as a career offender. The district court was wrong to find that he had two predicate offenses. His mob action conviction, stemming from a 1993 incident, was not a crime of violence. Ryan Cole pled guilty to mob action in that he, along with others, disturbed the peace. The charge in that case involved that windows of vehicles had been shot out.
Somebody in the vehicle when they were shot out?
Well, it's not clear from the record, but I think it's clear that the only inference you can make is that no one was in the vehicle for the following reasons. If there were people in the vehicle, I think it would have been logical to assume that you can't shoot at the windows of a vehicle that's occupied without being charged with attempted murder or aggravated discharge of a firearm, some other offense. But he's charged with shooting out the windows of vehicles, and from a reading of the transcript when he pled guilty in 1993 in that state court charge, there's no mention of the vehicle being occupied. So I think it's a
fair... Where did the crime take place?
In the city of Decatur, Illinois. And Decatur's a large city, and it has unpopulated areas. And I think it's inappropriate to infer that there was anyone around when these windows on these vehicles were shot.
Now, your biggest problem, I think, is if you just look at the title of the crime with which he was charged, mob action, that sounds violent.
It does, and I think there's a legislative purpose in naming statutes to have a certain ring to them. But mob action can, and I think it's appropriate that we analyze what it takes to commit mob action. It's the joining together of two or more people for the purpose of, in this case, disturbing the peace by shooting vehicles. But I think you can be guilty of mob action, and the record is not clear here that this wasn't how this played out. You can be guilty of mob action by joining with another person and then the two of you acting somewhat separately. And it's not clear that Cole ever discharged a firearm.
Is that important, though? I mean, we our law of conspiracy is such that we always attribute the actions of one member of a group involved in nefarious acts to the other. I mean, this man certainly was involved in concerted activity.
Except, Your Honor, that he's not being charged with mob action through an accomplice theory. Mob action in and of itself is a built-in accomplice theory. In other words, the crime is the joining together with other people, and then the events occur. And I think we can infer, for purposes of the application of these sentencing guidelines, that Brian Cole didn't possess a firearm because in 1993 he was already a convicted felon. And there's no charge for being a felon in possession of a firearm. There's no charge for attempting to injure anyone or attempted murder or any of that. And so I think a fair inference from the lack of those charges is that the evidence was that Brian Cole didn't do the shooting.
Or that the prosecutor gave him a pass.
Possibly.
Let me get back to this question of whether someone was in the cars, because the record is not clear on that point, as you indicate. But weren't there other people in the area at the time the shots were fired?
No.
Doesn't the transcript reflect that?
No, it does not. There is no evidence that anyone else was present. None whatsoever. Now, Judge McCuskey mentions things like that, but it's pure conjecture and speculation. There is no evidence that anyone else was present. And I think that that's a critical point in this case. You only get there through the conjecture and the speculation that the Rutherford case and others say we cannot do. One could imagine that there might have been a crowd of 50. But you have to use conjecture and speculation to know that from the facts in this case. in fact, as I indicated, I think that the absence of charges of attempting to injure someone else would indicate that there weren't other people around. Now, the Chapel case was a case of the possession of a gun stuck in the waistband of a convicted felon in the back of a taxi cab. And the court found that that mere possession of the gun wasn't enough to make that a predicate offense for this sentencing guideline. But went on to say that many different overt actions with a gun might be different. So brandishing a gun, displaying a gun, threatening someone with a gun. But all of those other examples involve the presence of someone else. Someone to threaten with a gun or to brandish or display a gun infers or implies that someone else is present. None of that is present in this case. And the only way we get to risk to personal injury to someone else in this case is to engage in conjecture and speculation, because the record is devoid of any evidence that anyone else was present. Not necessary, and under a test of, well, what minimal facts would have to have been true for the essential elements of mob action to be in place there. If we look at that sort of a test, it's not necessary that anyone else be present for this to be mob action. And in fact, there's no evidence that anyone else was present. To the extent that assumptions were made, assumptions about this being a populated area, assumptions about which windows of a vehicle even were shot out, there, you know, the charging instrument or the remarks made at the guilty plea in the mob
which
action.
Which is it? How far do we go beyond the charging document?
Well, I think it must be, these facts must be contained in the charging argument for the court to consider them.
All right, so everything else is irrelevant.
That's correct.
Okay.
And only insofar as it enlightens us.
Well, now what? Well, now you're backtracking.
Well, I'm.
So make up your mind.
No, I think that we limit ourselves to the charging instrument to the extent that that resolves the dispute. It's by analyzing the what ifs that we enlighten.
You won't give me a straight answer.
I'm sorry. Those are examples used to help us see.
Well, would you make up your mind? Do you have a position? Maybe you don't have a position on it.
I do have a position.
And what is it?
We should limit ourselves to the charging instrument.
Fine.
And
what?
And it is sometimes helpful.
Well, then you're not limiting yourself to the charging document.
Well, Your Honor, if I could finish my thought, what I'm trying to...
Well, what your thought is just a contradiction.
Okay. Well, it's only by analyzing what could possibly fit into that charging instrument that we see that it contains conduct that is not incorporated in the sentencing guideline. What if no one else was around? Now, that's not, I don't think, going beyond the charging instrument. It's saying, I see, the charging instrument would still fit if no one else was around. And we must take that into consideration to see that the charging instrument isn't good enough in this case to qualify for the sentencing guideline. That's all I meant by going beyond the charging instrument, to see the what-ifs and to say, you know what, I guess it is conjecture and speculation to assume that someone else was around when this charging instrument would fit just as well in this case and as if no one else was around.
If that's your position, let's get back to Judge Posner's point. The charging document, because the language of the charging document is problematic for you because it says knowingly by use of force and violence.
That's correct. Violence, I think, in that charging instrument referred to violence against unoccupied property. And that's not the same kind of violence that's contemplated in the sentencing guidelines. And that's the,
And so you're saying just a literal reading, since it talks about shooting out the windows and struck the vehicles, that that's all it can be? In other words, that it doesn't encompass individuals who were potentially in the area or in the car.
That's correct. There weren't necessarily individuals present. That violence
referred... How could these people be certain there was no one in the car?
Pardon me?
How could they be certain there was no one in the car?
You can't be certain.
But that doesn't that make it rather dangerous to shoot into a car?
Oh, how could the shooter be certain
right.
there? Oh, I believe that there's many situations when you could see a car and know it to be unoccupied. At least you could look at a car and know that it's unoccupied by any reasonable standard. The question is, how could the court assume that it was occupied, or conjecture or speculate that it was occupied?
Okay, thank you,
you,
Mr. Bruno. Mr. Risley?
May it please the court and counsel. Your Honors, I'd like to begin by addressing the question of whether the portion of the record which we can consider, namely the charging document itself, indicates that there was anyone other than the defendant involved in the immediate area who could be injured by the shooting out of these windows. Well, the answer to that is yes. The charge is mob action. One of the elements is that the defendant acted in concert with one or more other persons to commit the offense. So we know that there was at least one other person. In fact, the defendant argued that he was not the one. The record doesn't show conclusively that he was the one who fired the shots. That means that if either someone else was present who was the co-conspirator and he fired the shots,
Why did the co-conspirator have to be present?
Well, he's arguing that he was not the one who fired the shots and that this was in the course of a mob action. It would be difficult to imagine a mob action in which there was not someone else immediately
present. No, it wouldn't. The other people send someone. They order this. They order one of their party to go and shoot out the windows. They don't have to be. The other conspirators don't have to be physically present.
To be a mob.
You don't have
action.
The whole mob going to the place scene of the crime.
For a conspiracy to exist, that'd be correct. But to be a mob action constituting a disturbance of the peace, one
the
person
whole mob has to be there?
Well, the elements of the offense suggest that, Your Honor.
Where?
The mob action is defined in the Illinois statutes as the use of force or violence disturbing the public peace by two or more persons acting together and without authority of law. It's not a conspiracy statute. It suggests that two or more persons were acting together to disturb the peace.
Is there case law on that?
I can't say. I can't address that. I have not looked at
but
that.
But your theory is that the people endangered were the other members of the mob?
Well, there's at least. But one can also reasonably infer, because the state had to prove this crime beyond a reasonable doubt, and the defendant pled guilty to it, that there were witnesses. If there were no witnesses, if the defendant was the only person present, acting as a co-conspirator on behalf of others who were not present, as under the fact the court has posited, then there would be no witnesses.
That's very conjectural.
I don't think it's conjectural that the
government... Well, you don't have eyewitnesses to every successful criminal prosecution.
Your Honor, the court must look to the question of whether the charged conduct presents the serious potential that...
But now you're talking about... Now you're asking us to conjecture that there were witnesses to this. There's no basis for that.
Well, Your Honor, the standard...
He could have been fingered by another member of the mob and confessed.
The standard at sentencing is a preponderance of the evidence. It would be an unusual, in fact, an extraordinary case in which a defendant pled guilty to an offense when the government had no witnesses against him. No one to say he was the one who did it.
Oh, I don't know. I find that completely unpersuasive.
Well, in any event, the charging document says the defendant was acting in concert with one or more other persons when the offense was committed.
Yeah, but I want to get back to something that was raised with Judge Posner. So you're saying that who he acted with could be the person who was potentially in danger, and do you have any authority for that?
The sentencing guidelines say that someone other than the defendant be endangered. He can't be the only person who was endangered by his conduct and for the offense to be a crime of violence.
So you're saying his co-defendant could qualify?
Well, I'm not sure that it was a co-defendant. The record is
well,
not
clear. Well, the other individual.
To constitute a mob action.
And what I'm asking
at least
is,
one
do
other
you
person.
Have any Illinois law or any case law to support that interpretation?
That
the other person in the mob is the person who could potentially be injured.
No, Your Honor, I'm relying upon the express language of the guidelines, which defines a crime of violence as a felony that, quote, involves conduct that presents a serious potential risk of physical injury to another, close quote. Another person is not limited to another person who is not
a
co-defendant.
So is it critical that a gun was used if it were a crowbar?
Yes. If it were a crowbar that was
used. So is it your view that any time a gun is used in an offense, that's a crime of violence?
No, not necessarily. One must look to the circumstances of the charged offense, which is what we're doing in this case. Had there been no one around, no one in the area other than the defendant, and he used a firearm, so there was no potential that anyone other than the defendant could have been injured by a ricocheting bullet, then it would not have constituted a crime of violence. But when it's mob action,
so
and it's an element of the
offense. Been charged with malicious mischief? What if he charged with malicious mischief by shooting out the windows of a car? And how would you treat that?
Looking only at the facts alleged in the charging document and taking only the facts the court has given me, that does not sound to me like it would be sufficient to constitute a crime of violence because there wouldn't be sufficient facts without knowing more
right.
than that.
So now you've dropped your eyewitness theory.
No.
Yes. Because in that case, you would argue there had to be an eyewitness, otherwise he wouldn't have pleaded guilty.
Your Honor, I say that in addition to the elements of the offense. I'm not relying upon that. The elements of the offense to which the defendant admitted were true, which we, without reaching any inferences, no speculation, is that he acted in concert with one or more other persons.
You're certain that under Illinois law, those other people he was acting in concert with had to be present when the car was shot up?
Under the wording of
you haven't looked at any cases?
No, I have not.
So how do you know how it's interpreted by Illinois?
Well, Your Honor, I know what the facts were in this case. Everyone in the courtroom that's read the brief knows what the facts were
in
the case.
No, you don't. You just know what's in the charging document.
That's all we're looking at.
Right.
We know what the underlying facts were.
Well, you can't have it both ways.
I agree.
You can't have it that you just look at the charging document and then say you go on and look at the underlying facts.
I agree. I agree completely.
So if you can't, what's wrong with Mr. Bruno's argument that if the charging document is consistent with a state of affairs under which no one is endangered, then it's not a crime of violence?
Because, Your Honor, it's not consistent with that. The charging document said that the defendant, knowingly, by the use of force and violence, disturbed the public peace. Public implies other people are there. It didn't happen in the middle of the woods where no one can hear it. By the use of force and violence, disturbed the public peace, and that he, while acting together with one or more persons, that again, there are more people involved. This is a mob
come
action.
Come on, you're not saying, are you, by reference to the public peace in that charging document, that if this mob had done the identical acts in the woods, they couldn't be convicted of mob action?
There has to be at least one person other than
I understand that, but you say disturbing the public peace means that it's some kind of inhabited area. I'm asking you whether they would still be guilty of mob action if they had done this in the middle of nowhere.
With no one else other than the defendant present when it
happened? No, with just the mob present.
Yes.
But then public peace doesn't add anything to your argument.
Your Honor, the question is, does the language of the charging document provide the court with sufficient basis to conclude?
But public peace does no force, does no work in your argument.
All right. Two or more others does.
Right. That's your whole case.
That's the strongest argument. It's
but
not
you
the
think
only one.
These other people had to be physically present and were therefore endangered.
Mr. Reasley, you've been talking about the charging document, but I noticed that you did introduce during the sentencing hearing, the transcript of the state plea hearing, is that correct?
That's correct.
And was there an objection to your doing so?
No.
So that the court in this case at least did consider that. Absent an objection by the defendant, could the court in fact have considered that sentencing, that plea hearing transcript?
Your Honor, I believe the parties agreed that the court could not consider it unless it benefited the defendant, which was our purpose in doing it. It had been suggested by the probation office that potentially there were no firearms involved in the offense because the probation officer had confused the reports, police reports from this case with those of another case. That's why we looked to that to find out if the charge, it would be unfair for the defendant to be held liable under the language of the charging document for conduct that he actually did not commit.
And
so we did that, we resolved that issue, and the court said it was not considering that. And the parties did not consider that back
then. The court was not considering what?
The plea transcript. Only the court was only considering the language of the charging document, which under this court's en banc decision in the Shannon case was appropriate. If the conduct charged constituted a serious danger to others who might be hit by a stray bullet, including a fellow conspirator, then the sentence of the defendant should be affirmed.
Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Risley, and thank you to Mr. Bruno. And you were appointed, were you not?